Cassette number 27, side 1, a treatise on cosmic fire, continuing section 2, division E, motion on the plane of mind, on page 1118. The jewel itself remains occultly static and does not circulate. It is a point of peace. It pulsates rhythmically, as does the heart of man, and from it ray forth 8 streams of living fire, which extend to the tips of the 4 love petals and the 4 sacrifice petals. This eightfold energy is Atma Buddhi. Page 1119. It is this final raying forth which produces the eventual disintegration of the body of the ego. The knowledge petals, not being the subject of the attention of this central fire, in due time cease to be active. Knowledge is superseded by divine wisdom, and the love petals have their forces equally absorbed. Naught is eventually left but the desire to sacrifice, and as the vibratory impulse is akin to the nature of the living jewel, it is synthesized in the central living unit, and only the jewel of fire remains. When all the petals have merged their forces elsewhere, the process of revelation is completed. The lower fires die out, the central fire is absorbed, and only the radiant point of electric fire persists. Then a curious phenomenon is to be seen at the final initiation. The jewel of fire blazes forth as 7 jewels within the one, or as the sevenfold electric spark, and in the intensity of the blaze thus created is reabsorbed into the monad, or the one. This process is paralleled at the final consummation of solar evolution when the 7 suns blaze forth before the great pralaya. All these modes of expression are but pictures which serve to convey some small idea of the beauty and the intricacy of the divine process as it is carried on in the microcosm and in the macrocosm. They all serve to limit and circumscribe the reality, but to the man who has the divine eye in process of opening, and to him who has the faculty of the higher intuition awakened, such pictures serve as a clue or key to the higher interpretation. They reveal to the student certain ideas as to the nature of fire. In concluding what is to be said anent motion in the causal body, I would like to point out that it too, on its own plane, has the 3 characteristics of inertia, mobility, and rhythm. Inertia characterizes the stage prior to the revolution of the different tiers of petals, and this revolution only begins to be felt when the petals are becoming active. Page 1120. It might be stated that the passing of the pilgrim through the hall of ignorance corresponds to the period of egoic inertia. During this period, the permanent atoms are the most noticeable points of light in the lotus. They constitute the energy feeders of the petal. Later, as the pilgrim on the physical plane becomes more active and the egoic lotus is consequently unfolding with greater rapidity, the stage of mobility supervenes and the circles commence their revolution. Finally, when the man treads the path and his purpose is intensified, the central bud unfolds, the revolution is unified, and through the raying forth of the fires of the jewel, a specific rhythm is imposed upon the lotus, and its energies are stabilized. This rhythm is diverse according to the type of monad concerned, or the nature of the planetary logos of a man's ray, his divine prototype. By the use of certain terms, information is conveyed to the workers of the planet, the Brotherhood of Light, as to the nature of ego concerned, the quality of his ray, the number of his vibration, and the point of evolution attained. It will be apparent, therefore, why it is not permitted here to make public the names of the 7 rhythmic groups. One of the effects produced in the lower man via the centers through the unified activity of the causal body is the coordination of the lower energies of the human being. These lower energies, as we know, demonstrate through the medium of A, the 3 groups of centers in the 3 bodies, B, the etheric body itself, C, certain centers in the physical body, such as the pineal gland, the pituitary body, and the spleen. We are not here referring to the work of those centers as it is self-initiated, because inherent in their very nature. but to the effects to be seen in them as the three tiers of petals function with increasing coherence, and the force latent in the jewel makes its presence felt. Page 1121. Hidden in the plans of the one about whom naught may be said, and in this solar system there is no hope for them. Fortunately, they are little likely to make themselves known to average man. It is the adepts of the good law who meet them the most often. The subject is most intricate, but some light may come if we remember that Manas on the mental plane is found in two expressions, the mental unit on the form levels and the monastic permanent atom on the formless planes. These two types of Manas may be regarded as embodying the qualities of the two kinds, white and black. The mental unit or the mind aspect of a man, for instance, is, after all, but the sixth sense, and has to be transcended by the higher mind and the intuition. The black brother carries the evolution of the senses onto a stage inconceivable to man now, and this sixth Mahatic sense is of vaster extent and service to them than it ever is to the white adept. Therefore, it will be apparent that for a long cycle of time, the black magician can persist and develop his powers because one-third of the force of the egoic lotus is his, and he knows well how to utilize it to the best advantage. He builds also Anantaskarana, but of quality and objective different to that of the student of the white magic. It is called the path of monastic evil, and bridges a gap between the mental unit of the magician concerned and certain correspondences on mental levels in the vehicles of the devas of that plane. Through this medium and through identification with the devas, he can escape from the three worlds to spheres of evil incomprehensible to us. The point to be remembered here is that the black magician remains ever a prisoner. He cannot escape from substance and from form. There is no need to enlarge further on this subject. I would like to enumerate the lines of alignment of the third group, which eventually transcends the other two and effects the final illumination and liberation of the man. Page 1127. Group 3. 1. The sacrifice petals. 2. The sacrifice petals in the two outer groups. 3. The three major centers in each of the three planes of the three worlds, producing thus absorption of the lower four centers on each plane. 4. The head center or the thousand-petaled lotus. 5. The pineal gland, producing the vivification and irradiation of the entire lower nature. These three groups of forces in man, when synthesized, produce eventually that perfect coordination and adaptation to all conditions, forms, and circumstances which eventuate in the escape of the liberated vital spark. This is technically accomplished when the bud opens and it becomes possible for the Hierophant at initiation to liberate the energy of the monad and to direct that energy through the agency of the rod, so that eventually it circulates free and untrammeled through every part of the lower threefold manifestation. As it circulates, it destroys by burning, for it arouses the Kundalini aspect perfectly by the time the fifth initiation is taken. The destroyer aspect becomes dominated, and the form is burnt upon the altar. These ideas can also be studied in their larger aspect. A clue to the mystery of cosmic evil may be found in the difference existing between the sacred and non-sacred planets, and in the purpose and place, hitherto unrecognized, of the lives of the informing existences of the many planets and planetoids in the solar system. Some are purely Mahatic, or of the third aspect, dominated by the devas. Others, of which the sacred planets are examples, are controlled by the second aspect, and that second aspect will work through unconquerably into manifestation. Page 1128. A few, like our Earth planet, are battlegrounds, and the two aspects are in collision, with the indication of the eventual triumph of the white magic. Roman numeral 6. Effects of synthetic motion. 1. Introductory remarks on alignment. The effects of the synthetic activity of the centers, sheath, and causal body produce periodicity of manifestation, the linking of the triangles, the relation between A, the outer major center, B, the throat center, C, the centers on the mental plane. If we summarize the thoughts conveyed here, we will find that it deals with some aspects of that very necessary alignment which must take place prior to full ability to serve in final liberation. We have studied from many angles the component parts of man, the microcosm, and the mode whereby he manifests on earth in order to express that which lies hidden and to make his energy felt in the group and place where he finds himself. The constitution of the causal body has been seen to consist of a triple form of energy, with a fourth and more dynamic type of force latent at the heart, ready to demonstrate when the other three forms are active, thus utilizing them as a vehicle. We have noted also that there are also three forms of energy which we call the sheaths of the personal self, and which have also to be actively functioning before the triple egoic force can make itself felt through their medium. Added to these factors must be mentioned the seven centers in etheric matter which find their place in the etheric body, and which awaken and become active as the sheaths swing into rhythmic activity. Of these centers, the three major are of the main importance where egoic alignment is concerned, and their vital force only begins to make itself felt after the lower four are fully active. Page 1129. A second factor which works into the general scheme here is the latent triple kundalini fire, which is aroused and mounts through the triple spinal channel just as soon as the three major centers, the head, the heart, and the throat, form an esoteric triangle, and can thus pass the fiery energy hidden in each center in circulatory fashion. To summarize, therefore, we have perfected alignment just as soon as the following factors have been put in touch with each other, or as soon as their motion or activity is synthesized. This is a most important subject for students of meditation, and for those who tread the path of attainment to consider and practically realize. 1. The three tiers of petals. 2. The three sheaths. 3. The three major centers. 4. The threefold kundalini fire. 5. The threefold spinal channel. 6. The three head centers, the pineal gland, the pituitary body, the outer major center. Footnote. The outer major center, which is formed at the point where the spinal channel contacts the skull and is therefore situated in the lowest part of the back of the head, is formed of the lowest grade of etheric matter, matter of the fourth ether, whereas the etheric centers of the disciples are composed of matter of the higher ethers. Return to text. Another factor which must be allowed for in advanced stages of development is the third eye, which is to the occultist and true white magician what the fourth energy center, the jewel in the lotus, is to the lotus or to the three tiers of petals. The correspondence is interesting. The jewel in the lotus is the director of energy from the monad, whilst the third eye directs the energy of the ego on the physical plane. The jewel in the lotus is the center of force which links the buddhic and mental planes. When it is to be seen and felt, the man can function consciously on the buddhic plane. Page 1130. The third eye links the awakened physical plane man with the astral or subjective world and enables him to function consciously there. The jewel or diamond concealed by the egoic lotus is the window of the monad or spirit, whereby he looks outward into the three worlds. The third eye is the window of the ego or soul, functioning on the physical plane, whereby he looks inward into the three worlds. The jewel in the lotus is situated between manas and buddhi, whilst the third eye is found between the right and left eyes. One of the main functions of the master in this cycle, though not in all cycles, is to teach his pupil how to reconcile all these factors, how to synthesize their various modes of motion or expression, and how to coordinate them all so that the vibration is uniform. When energy from the ego controls or imposes its rhythm upon the various sheaths via their respective major centers, when the triple fire is mounting in orderly fashion via the triple channel, And when the three head centers are united in triangular fashion, then we have illumination, or the irradiance of the entire personality life. Darkness gives place to light, and the sun of knowledge arises and dispels the darkness of ignorance. The minor centers are concerned with the internal coordination of the sheath, the major with the group coordination or the interrelation of one sheath to another. The man becomes a burning and a shining light, radiating forth a light which burns from within. When the next step is accomplished and the energy of the monad, focused through the jewel, makes itself felt also on the physical plane, passing through the triple egoic lotus via the channels already utilized by the ego, we have a man who is inspired, who is a spiritual creator, and who is himself a sun of healing radiance. Page 1131. These are the objectives before all those who tread the path, and the goal ahead for those who follow the necessary discipline of life and the stages of unfoldment through meditation. There are, needless to say, certain modes of work and mantric formulas known to the masters which enable them to hasten the process, when necessary, for their disciples, but these are secrets scrupulously guarded and not frequently used. The usual method, a lengthy and laborious one, is to let the pupil find out each step of the way for himself, to teach him the constitution of his own body, the nature of the sheaths, and the function and apparatus of energy, and so let him gradually become aware of the forces latent in himself. What is meant by the three periodical vehicles and the seven principles or qualities of force is slowly revealed to him, and through experience, experiment, frequent failures, occasional success, mature reflection and introspection, and frequent incarnation, he is brought to the point where he has produced a certain measure of alignment through self-induced and continuous effort. He is then taught how to utilize that alignment and how to manipulate energy consciously so that he can bring about, on the physical plane, results in service that for many lives have been probably a dream or an impossible vision. When he is proficient in these two things, stabilization and manipulation, then and only then are committed to him the words and secrets which produce the demonstration on the physical plane of spiritual or monadic energy by means of the soul or egoic energy, utilizing in its turn the energy of the material forms in the worlds, or what we might call bodily energy. This has been expressed in the following mystical and occult phrase, quote, "When the jewel sparkles, as does the diamond, under the influence of the rays of the blazing sun, then the setting likewise gleams and rays forth light. As the diamond shines with increasing brilliance, the fire is generated which sets on fire that which held and enclosed." Close quote. Page 1132. 2. Motion produces periodic manifestation. We must here bear in mind that we are considering synthetic alignment in connection with the second aspect, and are therefore dealing with the activity of those forms of divine manifestation which are nearing their objective. This objective might be defined as ability to vibrate synchronously with the greater unit of which it is a part. This must therefore be considered by the student in seven ways. The first three ways concern the relation of the perfected or nearly perfected units in the three kingdoms of nature with their immediate group soul and their continued manifestation in any particular kingdom. Fourth, the relation of the disciple or man on the path to his immediate group and the laws which govern his reappearance in physical incarnation. Fifth, the relation of a planetary spirit to his group of planets, and the processes of man's obscuration or withdrawal from physical plane manifestation. Sixth, the relation of the major three planetary spirits, or the three major aspects of the Logos and their manifestation. Seventh, the relation of the informing life of a solar system to the group of constellations of which he forms part, and his periodic manifestation. These subjects have been touched upon when we studied incarnation, and earlier still, when considering pralaya or obscuration. but we dealt then with them in general terms. We might now deal more specifically with the final activities or modes of motion in these various congeries of lives and see what occurs during the final stages of conscious existence and of limited manifestation. Page 1133. The subject is peculiarly abstruse, particularly where the elemental groups are concerned, but certain interesting points might here be brought out which will bear the closest study. Let us consider the three lower kingdoms first, and pass later to the methods and activities of a human being, of a planetary locus, and of a solar locus. The appearance and the final disappearance of any manifested life is intimately concerned with the possession, the evolutionary development, and the final disintegration of the permanent atom. Permanent atoms, as the term is usually understood, are the property of those lives only who have achieved self-consciousness or individuality, and therefore relative permanence in time and space. The permanent atom may be viewed as the focal point of manifestation on any particular plane. It serves, if I may use so peculiar a term, as the anchor for any particular individual in any particular sphere. And this is true of the three great groups of self-conscious lives: A, the incarnating jivas, or human beings; B, the planetary logoi; C, the solar logos. We must remember here that all the atomic subplanes of the seven planes form the seven spirillae of the logoic permanent atom, for this has a close bearing upon the subject under consideration. The units, therefore, in the three lower kingdoms possess no permanent atoms, but contribute to the formation of those atoms in the higher kingdoms. Certain wide generalizations might here be made, though too literal or too identified an interpretation should not be put upon them. First, it might be said that the lowest or mineral kingdom provides that vital something which is the essence of the physical permanent atom of the human being. It provides that energy which is the negative basis for the positive inflow which can be seen pouring in through the upper depression of the physical permanent atom. Page 1134. Secondly, the vegetable kingdom similarly provides the negative energy for the astral permanent atom of a man. And thirdly, the animal kingdom provides the negative force which, when energized by the positive, is seen as the mental unit. This energy, which is contributed by the three lower kingdoms, is formed of the very highest vibration of which that kingdom is capable, and serves as a link between man and his various sheaths, all of which are allied to one or other of the lower kingdoms. A. The mental body, mental unit, animal kingdom. B. The astral body, astral permanent atom, vegetable kingdom. C. The physical body, physical permanent atom, mineral kingdom. In man, these three types of energy are brought together and synthesized, and when perfection of the personality is reached and the vehicles aligned, we have A, the energy of the mental unit, positive; B, the energy of the astral permanent atom, equilibrized; C, the energy of the physical permanent atom, negative. Man is then closely linked with the three lower kingdoms by the best that they can provide, and they have literally given him his permanent atoms and enabled him to manifest through their activity. The above three groups might be studied also from the standpoint of the three gunas: 1. Tamas, inertia, mineral kingdom, physical permanent atom; 2. Rajas, activity, vegetable kingdom, astral permanent atom; 3. Sattva, rhythm, animal kingdom, mental unit. Footnote. Quote, "Hence every manifested God is spoken of as a trinity. The joining of these three aspects or phases of manifestation at their outer points of contact with the circle gives the basic triangle of contact with matter, which, with the three triangles made with the lines traced by the point, thus yields the divine tetractys, sometimes called the cosmic quaternary, the three divine aspects in contact with matter, ready to create. These, in their totality, are the oversoul of the cosmos that is to be. Under form, we may first glance at the effects of these aspects as responded to from the side of matter. These are not, of course, due to the logos of a system, but are the correspondences in universal matter with the aspects of the universal self. The aspect of bliss or will imposes on matter the quality of inertia, tamas, the power of resistance, stability, quietude. The aspect of activity gives to matter its responsiveness to action, rajas, mobility. The aspect of wisdom gives it rhythm, sattva, vibration, harmony. It is by the aid of matter thus prepared that the aspects of logoic consciousness can manifest themselves as beings. Close quote. From A Study in Consciousness by Annie Besant, page 9. Return to text, page 1135. All these must be regarded only from the point of view of the personality, the lower self, or not self. In illustration of this idea, it might be pointed out that when the animal body of pre-human man was rhythmically adjusted and had attained its highest or sattvic vibration, then individualization became possible and a true human being appeared in manifestation. Each kingdom is positive to the one next below it, and between them is found that period of manifestation which bridges the two and connects the positive and the negative. The types of most intense rajas, or activity, in the mineral kingdom are found in those forms of life which are neither mineral nor vegetable, but which bridge the two. Similarly, in the vegetable kingdom, the rajas period is seen in fullest expression just before the activity becomes rhythmic and the vegetable merges in the animal. In the animal kingdom, the same is seen in the animals which individualize, passing out of the group soul into separated identity. These types of activity must be regarded as constituting for the mineral physical activity, for the vegetable sentient activity, and for the animal rudimentary mental activity. When this triple activity is achieved, it might be noted that the dense physical body of the solar or planetary logos is fully developed, and conscious contact can then be made with the etheric or vital body. Page 1136. It is this contact which produces man, for spirit, as man understands the term, is, after all, but the energy, vitality, or essential life of the solar or planetary logos. Its correspondence in man is prana. A comprehension of this will be brought about if man realizes that all the planes of our solar system are but the 7 subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. It is the realization of this which will eventually unite science and religion, for what the scientist calls energy, the religious man calls God, and yet the two are one, being but the manifested purpose in physical matter of a great extra-systemic identity. Nature is the appearance of the physical body of the logos, and the laws of nature are the laws governing the natural processes of that body. The life of God, his energy and vitality, are found in every manifested atom. His essence indwells all forms. This we call spirit, yet he himself is other than those forms, just as man knows himself to be other than his bodies. He knows himself to be a will and a purpose, and as he progresses in evolution, that purpose and will become to him ever more consciously defined. So with the planetary logos and solar logos. They dwell within, yet are found without, the planetary scheme or solar system. It is useful to remember that in the 3 lower kingdoms, manifestation or appearance on the physical plane is ever group manifestation and not the appearance of separated units. Each group soul, as it is called, is divided into 7 parts which appear in each of the 7 races of a world period, and there is an interesting distinction between them and the units of the human kingdom. When portions of the group soul in one of its 7 parts are out of incarnation, they are to be found on the astral plane, even though the mother group soul is found on the mental plane. Human units of the 4th kingdom, when out of incarnation, pass through the astral to the mental and descend again to incarnation from mental levels. Page 1137. Each group soul, therefore, subjectively forms a triangle of force with 1 point, the highest, to be found on the mental plane, the lowest on the etheric levels of the physical plane, and another on the astral plane. The third point for the mineral group soul is found on the second subplane of the astral, the vegetable on the third, and the animal on the fourth. It is owing to the fact that a center of force for the animal group soul is found on the fourth subplane of the astral plane that it is possible for transference eventually to be made out of that kingdom into the fourth. Certain laws govern the appearance periodically of the three kingdoms of nature, which are the laws of involution, the laws of the elemental kingdoms, and the laws of the three great groups which hold the germs and seeds of all manifested forms. We have in logoic manifestation the following seven groups for consideration. 1, 2, 3, three groups of superhuman existence, A, the group forming the father aspect of which little can here be predicated, B, the group of seven planetary logoi, C, the group of seven Raja Devas, or the life of each of the physical planes. 4, a group of solar lives who are the Manasa Putras, or man. 5, 6, 7, three groups of elemental lives who form the three involutionary elemental kingdoms. These three lower groups achieve concretion and enter the upward arc through the medium of the three lower kingdoms. The fourth group is the most important in some ways during the present cycle, for it borrows from all the other six groups and is therefore the synthesis of energies taken from each and manifested. The higher three groups are closely allied, and until a man has passed out of the period of existence wherein he is controlled by that which he has borrowed from the three lower kingdoms, he cannot comprehend the nature and purpose of the three higher. Page 1138. We might express the matter as follows. The three higher groups are sattvic, the three lower groups are tamasic, the fourth group, or human, is rajasic. Again, the three higher groups are energized by three streams of force which enter along the line of the three spirillae of the logoic permanent atom. The three lower groups are energized by energy entering by the three lowest spirillae, which we call the three lowest planes, and these spirillae energize the logoic dense body, were vitalized in the previous solar system, and are no longer in any way controlling factors in logoic existence. The fourth group, the human, is energized by the force of the fourth spirilla, to which we give the name of buddhic energy, and this fourth group has, therefore, the problem of bringing about conditions whereby the buddhic vibrations may dominate the other and lower three. It is this imposition which eventually releases the human units and permits of their passing into the higher group. The elemental group souls find correspondences in the higher, first in the human kingdom in the three main groups of egos in whom the three types of energy predominate, again in the three main or major planetary groups, and finally in the three aspects. Elemental group, animal kingdom, sattvic, father aspect, solar logos, Uranus. Elemental group, vegetable kingdom, rajasic, sun aspect, planetary logoi, Neptune. Elemental group, mineral kingdom, tamasic, mother, Brahma aspect, plane devas, Saturn. End of side 1, cassette number 27, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 1138. Continued on side 2. Side 2, cassette number 27, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section 2, division E, Motion on the Plane of Mind, on page 1139. The fourth, or human, group unites all three lives. The periodic manifestation of the three elemental groups through the medium of the three lower kingdoms is, therefore, governed by factors hidden in the nature of that great vibration which we call tamasic, or heavy rhythm. It is the vibration of Brahma, the third aspect, the mother, or matter aspect. Their appearance, therefore, is one of a very slow manifestation, the seven subsidiary vibrations bringing in one or other of the seven groups of each group soul in a very slow alternation. The cycles cannot be given. Two things only can be said. The appearance of these groups as units in manifestation is controlled by three factors. 1, the moon, for these are the many lunar fathers. 2. The ray in manifestation at any time. 3. The karma of the informing life of any kingdom. The second consideration is the karma and life history of the planetary entity. He sleeps and awakes. He is the embodiment of tamas, and as he progresses and evolves, so do the lower kingdoms. The lunar petries are to the planetary entity what the three major centers are to man or to the logoi. The lunar petries who contribute the human form are to the planetary entity the correspondents to the head center. Those who are the fathers of the vegetable forms correspond to his heart center, whilst the petries of the mineral kingdom are analogous to the throat center. This is all very obscure, but hints of much value lie here. It is not possible to give much further information relative to the periodical appearing of the subhuman forms of life. The subject is too obscure and the detail too vast. Until the student has fitted himself to appreciate the symbolic or hieroglyphic writings of the adepts, it is impossible for him to grasp the matter. Page 1140. Footnote. Symbols. Quote, in a symbol lies concealment or revelation, close quote. Carlyle. 1. Symbols are intended for A. The little evolved, they teach great truths in simple form. B. The bulk of humanity, they preserve truth intact and embody cosmic facts. C. The pupils of the masters, they develop intuition. 2. Symbolic books in the master's archives used for instruction. These books are interpreted A. by their color, B. by their position, i.e. above, on, and beneath a line, C. by their connection with each other, D. by their key. One page may be read four ways. 1. From above downwards, involution. 2. From beneath upwards, evolution. 3. Right to left, greater cycles, etc. 4. Left to right, lesser cycles. 3. The three keys. 1. Cosmic interpretation. The symbol standing for cosmic facts, i.e. darkness, light, the cross, the triangle. 2. Systemic interpretation. Dealing with evolution of system and all therein. 3. Human interpretation. Dealing with man himself, the cross of humanity, seven-branched candlestick. 4. Four kinds of symbols. 1. Symbols of extraneous objects, physical plane things. 2. Symbols of emotional nature, astral plane things, pictures. 3. Numerical symbolism, lower mental, man used himself to count by. 4. Geometrical symbolism, abstract symbolism, higher mental. Return to text.
Much of the teaching on this matter is found in records in the Department of the Manu, as it concerns primarily the initial stages of form building. It might be said that the appearance of any life in manifestation is due to primary activity on the part of some entity, which activity is largely the expression of the first ray. This concerns the periodical manifestation of the life or lives of any round, just as it concerns also the ephemeral existence of a dragonfly. It deals with the form through which what we call a race is evolving and concerns itself with the tiny life of an individual in that race. The same laws govern all, though the response to the law may be relative and in degree. This law has the generic name of the law of cycles and is expressed in terms of time. But the secret to the cycles may not as yet be given, as it would convey to the intuitive too much dangerous information. Page 1141. It is the knowledge of this law as it concerns rounds, races, sub-races, groups, involutionary and evolutionary, and individuals, human and superhuman, which enables the lords of karma and the adepts of the good law to manipulate force or energy, and so carry all that is on to its triumphant conclusion. In connection with this, students may get much light on this difficult question of force if they bear in mind that every form in every kingdom on the downward and the upward arc is in itself a negative force, impelled into activity by a positive force and demonstrating as a combination of the two. The distinctions are demonstrated in the fact that some forms are negative-positive, others positive-negative, while still others are at the point of equilibrium. This includes all the intermediate stages. The builders of the cosmos work under cyclic law consciously and utilize the aggregate of these forces in any kingdom, any group, or any unit to bring about the consummation of the plan. It would interest men much if they could see and interpret some of the records in the hierarchical records, for in them men and angels, minerals and elements, animals and vegetables, kingdoms and groups, gods and ants, are specified in terms of energy formulas, and by a scrutiny of these records, the approximate increase of vibration in any form of any kind can be found out at any time. This might be expressed in terms also of the gunas. It will be found by disciples, when permitted access to the records, that they themselves, along with every other expression of the divine life, are described by a triple formula which conveys to the mind of the initiate the proportions of or activity and of sattva or rhythm to be found in any form. This, therefore, through correspondences, imparts knowledge as to past achievement, present opportunity, and the immediate future of any unit or embodied life manifesting under any of the three aspects. Page 1142. Another series of files in the records give, under a different formula, information as to what is esoterically called the heat content of any unit, the radiating light of any form, and the magnetic force of every life. It is through this knowledge that the Lipikas control the bringing in and the passing out of every life, divine, superhuman, solar, and human. And it is through a consideration of that formula, which is the basic formula for a solar system, that the physical plane appearance of a solar locus is controlled and the length of a cosmic pralaya settled. We must not forget that the Lipika lords of the solar system have their cosmic prototypes, and that these have their feeble and groping human reflections in the great astronomical scientists who endeavor to ascertain facts anent the heavenly bodies, being subconsciously aware of the existence of these cosmic formulas conveying information as to the specific gravity, constitution, radiation, magnetic pull, heat and light of any sun, solar system, or constellation. Many of them in future and remote ages will pass to a full comprehension and will have the formulas committed to their care, thus joining the ranks of the Lipikas. It is a peculiar line requiring cycles of careful training in divine mathematics. The Lipika lords, controlling the periodical manifestation of life, are, roughly speaking, divided into the following groups, which it might be of interest to note. 1. Three extrasystemic or cosmic lords of karma, who work from a center in Sirius through the medium of three representatives. These form a group around the solar logos and hold to him a position analogous to the three Buddhas of activity who stand around Sanat Kumara. Page 1143. 2. Three Lipika lords who are the karmic agents working through the three aspects. 3. Nine Lipikas, who are the sum total of the agents for the law working through what the Kabbalah calls the nine Sephiroth. 4. Seven presiding agents of karma for each one of the seven schemes. These four groups correspond in manifestation to the unmanifested, manifesting through the triple aspects, and under them work an infinity of lesser agents. These lesser agents might again be somewhat differentiated, each of the following groups being found in every scheme and on every ray emanation. 1. The Lipika lords of a scheme who, through the manipulation of forces, make it possible for a planetary logos to incarnate under the law and work out his cyclic problem. 2. Those who, under the first group, control the destiny of a chain. 3. Those who are the energy directors of a globe. 4. Agents of every kind, who who are concerned with the karmic adjustments incident upon the periodical manifestation of such forms as A, a round, seven in all, B, a kingdom in nature, seven in all, C, the human kingdom, D, a root race, sub-race, and branch race, E, a nation, a family, a group, and their correspondences in all the kingdoms, F, a plane, G, the reptile and insect world, H, the bird evolution, I, the devas, J, human units, egoic groups, monadic lives, and myriads of other forms, objective and subjective, planetary and interplanetary, in connection with the sun and in connection with the planetoids. Page 1144. All work with energy emanations and with force units under cyclic law, and all have the same objective, the producing of perfected activity, intensification of heat, and of radiant magnetic light as an expression of the will or purpose of each embodied life. Periodicity of manifestation is the cyclic appearance of certain forms of specified energy. And this is true whether a man is speaking of a solar system, of a ray, of the appearance of a planet in space, or of the phenomenon of human birth. Certain factors extraneous to any energy unit under consideration will inevitably affect its appearance and act as deflecting or directing agents. The law of cycles has ever been regarded as one of the most difficult for a man to master. And it has been truly said that when a man has mastered its technicalities and can understand its methods of time computation, he has attained initiation. Its intricacies are so numerous and so bound up with the still greater law, that of cause and effect, that practically the whole range of possible knowledge is thereby surmounted. To comprehend this law involves ability to A. deal with the higher mathematical formulas of the solar system, B. compute the relationship between a unit of any degree and the greater whole upon whose vibration that unit is swept into periodic display, C. read the Akashic records of a planetary system, D. judge of karmic effects in time and space, E. differentiate between the four streams of karmic effects as they concern the four kingdoms of nature, F. distinguish between the three main streams of energy, the units of inertia, mobility, and rhythm, and note the key of each unit and its place in the great group of transitional points. Page 1145. These latter units are those who are on the crest of one of the three waves and ready, therefore, to be transferred into a wave of a higher vibratory capacity. G. Enter the Hall of Records and there read a peculiar group of documents dealing with planetary manifestation in a fourfold manner. It concerns the planetary logos and deals with the transference of energy from the moon chain. It concerns the transmission of energy to another planetary scheme and concerns the interaction between the human hierarchy, the fourth kingdom, and the great informing life of the animal kingdom. When a man can do all these things and has earned the right to know that which produces the phenomenon of manifestation, he has earned the right to enter into the councils of the planetary hierarchy and himself to direct streams of energy upon, through, and out of the planet. Some idea of the complexity governing the periodical manifestation of a human being may be gathered by a consideration of the forces which bring human units into manifestation, which produce individualization. This is, after all, the appearing of a third stream of energy in conjunction with two others. A man is the meeting ground of three streams of force, one or other preponderating according to his peculiar type. Let us briefly enumerate these factors and thus get some idea as to the complexity of the matter. The first and paramount factor is the ray upon which a particular human unit is found. This means that there are seven specialized force streams, each with its peculiar quality, type, and rhythm. The matter is further complicated by the fact that though the ray of the monad is its main qualifying factor, yet two subsidiary rays, those of the ego and of the personality, have likewise to be considered. Page 1146. Secondly, it must be borne in mind that the human units, now upon this planet, fall naturally into two great groups, those who reached individualization or became units of self-directing energy upon the moon, and those who attained self-consciousness upon the earth. There are important distinctions between these two groups, for the units of the moon chain are distinguished not only by a more advanced development owing to the longer period of their evolution, but also by the quality of great and intelligent activity. For, as might be expected, on the third or moon chain, the third ray was a dominant factor. In this fourth chain, the quaternary dominates, or the synthesis of the three, so as to produce a fourth. And this is one reason for the intensely material nature of those who entered the human kingdom on this planet. The distinctions between the two groups are very great, and one of the mysteries lying behind the main divisions of humanity, rulers and the ruled, capitalists and laborers, the governed and those who govern, is found right here. No system of sociological reform will be successfully worked out without a due consideration of this important fact. Other distinguishing features might be enumerated, but would only serve at this stage to complicate the matter. A third factor differentiating the groups of human units who reach self-consciousness on our planet is hidden in the methods employed by the Lords of the Flame at that time. They, we are told, employed three methods. First, they themselves took bodies and thus energized certain of the higher forms of the animal kingdom so that they appeared as man, and thus initiated a particular group. Their descendants can be seen in the highest specimens of the Earth humanity now on Earth. Page 1147. They are not even now, however, as far advanced as the groups of units from the moon chain who came in Atlantean days. Their heredity is peculiar. They implanted a germ of mind in the secondary group of animal men who were ready for individualization. This group, for a long time, was unable to express itself, and was most carefully nurtured by the Lords of Flame, nearly proving a failure. By the time, however, that the last sub-race of the Lemurian root race was at its height, it suddenly came into the forefront of the then civilization and justified hierarchical effort. Thirdly, they fostered the germ of instinct in certain groups of animal men until it flowered into mind. It must never be forgotten that men have within themselves, apart from any extraneous fostering, the ability to arrive and to achieve full self-consciousness. These three methods bring us to the fourth factor which must be remembered, that of the three modes of motion which powerfully affect the incarnating jivas. The sons of mind are distinguished by the three qualities of matter, as has been earlier brought out. And they have been generically called, 1. The sons of sattvic rhythm, 2. The sons of mobility, 3. The sons of inertia. These qualities are the characteristics of the three major rays and of the three persons of the Godhead. They are the qualities of consciousness, material, intelligent, and divine. They are the predominating characteristics of the chains of which our Earth is one. Earth planetary scheme. First chain, archetypal. Second chain, sattvic rhythm. Third chain, mobility. Fourth chain, inertia. Fifth chain, mobility. Sixth chain, sattvic rhythm. Seventh chain, perfection. Page 1148. The factors which we have considered as affecting the different incarnating units have a vital effect on their cyclic evolution, and the ray and the three main types produce varying periodic appearance. Certain statements have been made in occult books as to the length of time varying between incarnations. Such statements are in the main inaccurate, for they make no allowance for ray difference and permit of no calculations as to whether the human unit involved is a unit of inertia, a sattvic point, or a rajasic entity. No hard and fast rule can be laid down at this time for the general public, though such rules exist and are governed by seven different formulas for the three main types. Within this sevenfold differentiation exist many lesser, and the wise student refrains from dogmatic assertion on this most peculiar and difficult subject. The fringe of the matter has but been touched upon here. It should be remembered that in the earlier stages of incarnation, the unit is governed mainly by group appearance and comes into incarnation with his group. As time progresses and his own will or purpose becomes more distinctive, he will at times force himself into manifestation independently of his group, as will other group units, and this leads to an apparent confusion which is detrimental to the surface calculations of the superficial student. When this is the case, the particular unit concerned has his record transferred into another file in the hierarchical archives and becomes what is occultly termed a self-directed point of fire. He is then strongly individualized, entirely self-engrossed, free of all group sense except the earthly affiliations to which he adheres from the instinct of self-protection and personal well-being. Page 1149. In this stage, he remains for a vast period of time and has before him the mastering of a later stage in which he returns to the earlier group recognition on a higher turn of the spiral. The rules governing the incarnations of average man have been considered elsewhere, and much information has been given in this treatise and in Letters on Occult Meditation, which, if collated, will provide sufficient data for study for a long time. Not much has been given anent the incarnations of disciples and the methods involved in the later stages of evolution. It should here be borne in mind that, for a disciple, direct alignment with the ego via the centers and the physical brain is the goal of his life of meditation and of discipline. This is in order that the inner God may function in full consciousness and wield full control on the physical plane. Thus will humanity be helped and group concerns furthered. Again, it must be remembered that the basic ray laws and the disciple's particular type will paramountly dictate his appearances, but certain other forces begin to hold sway which might here be touched upon. The factors governing the appearance in incarnation of a disciple are as follows. First, his desire to work off karma rapidly and so liberate himself for service. The ego impresses this desire upon the disciple during incarnation and thus obviates any counter-desire on his part for the bliss of Devachan or even for work on the astral plane. The whole objective, therefore, of the disciple after death is to get rid of his subtler bodies and acquire new ones. There is no desire for a period of rest, and as desire is the governing factor in this system of desire, and particularly in this planetary scheme, if it exists not, there is no incentive to fulfillment. Page 1150. The man, therefore, absents himself from the physical plane for a very brief time and is driven by his ego into a physical body with great rapidity. Second, to work out some piece of service under direction of his master. This will involve some adjustments and occasionally the temporary arresting of his karma. These adjustments are made by the master with the concurrence of the disciple and are only possible in the case of an accepted disciple of some standing. It does not mean that karma is set aside, but only that certain forces are kept in abeyance until a designated group work has been accomplished. Third, a disciple will return into incarnation occasionally so as to fit into the plan of a greater than himself. When a messenger of the Great Lodge needs a vehicle through which to express himself and cannot use a physical body himself, owing to the rarity of its substance, he will utilize the body of a disciple. We have an instance of this in the manner the Christ used the body of the initiate Jesus, taking possession of it at the time of the baptism. Again, when a message has to be given out to the world during some recurring cycle, a disciple of high position in a master's group will appear in physical incarnation and be overshadowed or inspired in the technically occult sense by some teacher greater than he. Fourth, a disciple may, through lack of rounded development, be very far advanced along certain lines, but lack what is called the full intensification of a particular principle. He may therefore decide, with the full concurrence of his ego and of his master, to take a series of rapidly recurring incarnations, with the intention of working specifically at bringing a certain quality or series of qualities to a point of higher vibratory content, thus completing the rounding of his sphere of manifestation. This accounts for the peculiar yet powerful people who are met at times. They are so one-pointed and apparently so unbalanced that their sole attention is given to one line of development only, so much so that the other lines are hardly apparent. Page 1151. Yet their influence seems great and out of all proportion to their superficial worth. A realization of these factors will deter the wise student from hasty judgments and from rapid conclusions concerning his fellow men. Occasionally, a variation of this reason for rapid and immediate incarnation is seen when an initiate who has nearly completed his cycle appears in incarnation to express almost entirely one perfected principle. This he does for the good of a particular group, which, though engaged in work for humanity, is failing somewhat in its objective through the lack of a particular quality or stream of force. When this becomes apparent on the inner side, some advanced disciple puts the energy of that particular quality at the disposal of the hierarchy, and is sent forth to balance that group, and frequently to do so for a period of rapidly succeeding lives. These are a few of the causes governing the periodic manifestation of those who are grouped in the hierarchical records as the aligned points of fire. They are distinguished by the energy flowing through them, by the magnetic quality of their work, by their powerful group effects, and by their physical plane realization of the plan. The coming into manifestation of the superhuman lives, such as greater liberated existences or the Raja Devas of a plane, the appearing of the planetary Logoi and the solar Logoi in physical incarnation is governed by laws similar in nature to those governing the human unit, but of a cosmic scope. It will be apparent to the most superficial student that the gradual emergence of a plane out of the darkness which exists between systems is produced not only as the result of vibratory response to the enunciated word, but as the working out of the karma of a cosmic life, and the relationship existing between that particular life and the cosmic existence whom we call Brahma, or the third person of the Trinity. Page 1152. The Deva ruler of a plane is a superhuman entity who comes in under a great cosmic impulse to provide the vibratory form which will make possible the appearing of other and lesser forms. The lords of the rays, or the planetary Logoi, are similarly and karmically linked with the second aspect Logoic, or with that manifesting life we call Vishnu. It will thus be seen that three main impulses, each emanating from the will, plan or conscious purpose of a cosmic entity, are responsible for all that is seen and known in our solar system. This, of course, has been oft emphasized in different occult books, but the following tabulation may be of service. Cosmic entity, 1, Brahma. Systemic entities, the Raja Lords. Number of impulses, 7, activity. Quality, inertia. Cosmic entity 2, Vishnu. Systemic entities, the planetary Logoi. Number of impulses, 7, wisdom. Quality, mobility. Cosmic entity 3, Shiva. Systemic entities, the solar Logos. Number of impulses, 1, will. Quality, rhythm. It should be noted here that the above tabulation will apply to the microcosm as well as the macrocosm, and students will find it interesting to work it out. 3. Triangular linking. Enough has been indicated in this treatise to show the general plan underlying and accounting for systemic emergence or incarnation, and it is not my purpose here to enlarge at great length. Just as it is not possible for a man in an early incarnation to conceive of the effects of evolution upon him and to realize the nature of the man upon the path, So it is not possible for even great systemic existences to conceive, except in the broadest and most general terms, of the nature of the solar logos and of the effect evolution will have on him. Page 1153. Suffice it to add, anent this matter, that when certain vast cosmic alignments have been made, and the energy from the logoic causal ovoid on the cosmic mental planes is able to flow unimpeded through to the physical plane atom, our solar system, great eventualities and unconceived of possibilities will then take place. Certain phenomena, likewise, of a secondary nature to this major happening will also take place as the cycles slip away, which may be generally summarized as follows. First, certain systemic triangles will be formed, which will permit of the interplay of energy between the different planetary schemes, and thus bring to more rapid maturity the plans and purposes of the lives concerned. It should be noted here that when we are considering the transmission of energy through alignment and through the forming of certain triangles, it is always in connection with the energy of the first aspect. It deals with the transmission of electric fire. It is important to bear this in mind, as it preserves the analogy between the macrocosm and the microcosm with accuracy. Second, a final systemic triangle will be formed, which will be one of supreme force, for it will be utilized by the abstracted essence and energies of the septenate of schemes as the negative basis for the reception of positive electric energy. This electric energy is able to circulate through the schemes owing to the bringing about of a cosmic alignment. It is the bringing in of this terrific spiritual force during the final stages of manifestation which results in the blazing forth of the seven suns. Footnote: the rising and setting of the sun symbolizes manifestation and obscuration. Pralaya is of different kinds. One, cosmic pralaya, the obscuration of the three suns or of three solar systems. Two, solar pralaya, the obscuration of a system at the end of 100 years of Brahma, period between solar systems. Three, incidental pralaya, the obscuration of a scheme, period between manvantaras. Man repeats this at seventh, fifth initiations and at each rebirth in three worlds. The Pleiades are the center around which our solar system revolves. The sun is the kernel and matrix of all in the solar system. Kernel comes from the same word as corn. Compare the words in Bible, "Except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit." The sun is governed by the same laws as all other atoms. Taken from the Secret Doctrine, Volumes 1 and 2. Return to text. Though the seven have become the three, this is only in connection with the dense physical planets. The blazing forth spoken of in the occult books and in the Secret Doctrine is in etheric matter. It is this etheric, fiery energy which brings to a consummation, and so destroys, the remaining three major schemes. In this we have a correspondence to the burning of the causal body at the fourth initiation through the merging of the three fires. It is only a correspondence and the details must not be pushed too far. The Saturn scheme is esoterically regarded as having absorbed the frictional fires of systemic space. Neptune is looked upon as the repository of the solar flames, and Uranus as the home of fire electric. When, through extra-systemic activity based upon three causes, 1. Logoic alignment, 2. The taking of a logoic initiation, 3. The action of the one about whom naught may be said, these three schemes are simultaneously stimulated, and the fires pass from one to another in a triangular manner. They then, too, pass into obscuration. Naught is left save the blazing etheric suns, and these, through very intensity of burning, dissipate with great rapidity. Page 1155. 4. Relation between the throat, alta major, and mental centers. The question of the centers has always had a great deal of interest for men, and much harm has been done through the directing of attention upon the physical centers. Unfortunately, names have been given to the centers which have their counterparts in the physical form, and with the usual aptitude of man to identify himself with that which is tangible and physical, a mass of data has accumulated which is based not on spiritual knowledge, but on a study of the effects produced through meditation on the physical centers. Such meditation is only safely undertaken when a man is no longer polarized in the lower personal self, but views all things from the standpoint of the ego with whom he is completely identified. When this is the case, the centers in physical matter are recognized as being simply focal points of energy located in the etheric body and having a definite use. This use is to act as transmitters of certain forms of energy consciously directed by the ego or self, with the intent of driving the physical body, which is not a principle, to fulfill egoic purpose. To do this, the ego has to follow certain rules, to conform to law, and to have attained not only conscious control of the physical body, but a knowledge of the laws of energy and of the constitution of the etheric body and its relation to the physical. The attention of students must be called to certain fundamental facts anent the centers, and thus supplement, correlate, and summarize that already given in this treatise. That a certain amount of repetition will be necessary is of value, and the information here given and the correspondences indicated should provide all followers of Raja Yoga with a basis for sane consideration, wise meditation, and a fuller comprehension of the truths involved. Owing to the rapid development of the race and the future quick unfoldment of etheric vision, the gain will be very real if occult students have at least a theoretical concept of the nature of that which will be seen relatively so soon. Page 1156. The centers, as we know, are seven in number and are formed in matter of the etheric subplanes of the physical plane. As we have been told, there are literally ten, but the lower three are not considered as subjects for the direction of egoic energy. They relate to the perpetuation of the physical form and have a close connection with A, the three lower kingdoms in nature, B, the three lower subplanes of the physical plane, C, the third solar system from the logoic standpoint. It must be borne in mind that though the three solar systems, the past, the present, and that which is to come, are differentiated in time and space where the consciousness of man is concerned, from the point of view of the logos, they represent more accurately highest, intermediate, and lowest, and the three form but one expression. The past system, therefore, is deemed esoterically the third, being the lowest, and being related to the dense and negative matter. It will be apparent that the past solar system has consequently a close relation to the third or animal kingdom, and this man has presumably transcended. The seven centers with which man is concerned are themselves found to exist in two groups. A lower four, which are related to the four rays of attributes, or the four minor rays, and are therefore closely connected with the quaternary, both microcosmic and macrocosmic, and a higher three, which are transmitters for the three rays of aspect. These energy centers are transmitters of energy from many and varied sources, which might be briefly enumerated as follows. Page 1157. A. From the seven rays via the seven sub-rays of any specific monadic ray. B. From the triple aspects of the planetary logos as he manifests through a scheme. C. From what are called the sevenfold divisions of the logoic heart, or the sun in its sevenfold essential nature, as it is seen lying esoterically behind the outer physical solar form. D. From the seven rishis of the Great Bear. This pours in via the monad and is transmitted downward, merging on the higher levels of the mental plane with seven streams of energy from the Pleiades, which come in as the psychical force demonstrating through the solar angel. All these various streams of energy are passed through certain groups or centers, becoming more active and demonstrating with a freer flow as the course of evolution is pursued. As far as man is concerned at present, this energy all converges and seeks to energize his physical body and direct his action via the seven etheric centers. These centers receive the force in a threefold manner, a force from the heavenly man and therefore from the seven rishis of the Great Bear via the monad, b force from the Pleiades via the solar angel or ego, c force from the planes, from the Rajadevas of a plane, or Phohatic energy, via the spirillae of a permanent atom. It is this fact which accounts for the gradual growth and development of a man. At first it is the force of the plane substance which directs him, causing him to identify himself with the grosser substance and to consider himself a man, a member of the fourth kingdom, and to be convinced, therefore, that he is the not-self. Page 1158. Later, as force from the ego pours in, his psychical evolution proceeds. I use the word psychical here in its higher connotation. And he begins to consider himself as the ego, the thinker, the one who uses the form. Finally, energy from the monad begins to be responded to, and he knows himself to be neither the man nor the angel, but a divine essence or spirit. These three types of energy demonstrate during manifestation as spirit, soul, and body, and through them the three aspects of the Godhead meet and converge in man and lie latent in every atom. The sevenfold energy of the planes, and therefore of substance, finds its consummation when the four lower centers are fully active. The sevenfold energy of the psyche, the consciousness aspect, demonstrates when the three higher in the three worlds are vibrating with accuracy. The sevenfold activity of spirit makes itself felt when each of these seven centers is not only fully active, but is rotating as wheels turning upon themselves, when they are fourth dimensional and are not only individually alive, but are all linked up with the sevenfold head center. A man is then seen as he is truly, a network of fire with flaming focal points transmitting and circulating fiery energy. These centers not only receive the energy through the top of the head or through a point slightly above the top of the head, to be more accurate, but pass it out through the head center likewise, that which is being passed out being seen as differing in color, being brighter and vibrating more rapidly than that which is being received. The etheric body is formed of a negative aspect of fire and is the recipient of a positive fire. As the various types of fire blend, merge, and circulate, they gain thereby and produce definite effects in the fires of the microcosmic system. Page 1159. The center at the base of the spine, the lowest with which man has consciously to deal, is one of a peculiar interest owing to its being the originating center for three long streams of energy which pass up and down the spinal column. This triple stream of force has most interesting correspondences which can be worked out by the intuitive student. Some hints may here be given. This channel of threefold energy has itself three points of supreme interest which, to word it so as to convey sense to the interested, may be regarded as 1. The basic center at the extreme lowest point of the spine, 2. The ultra major center at the top of the spine, 3. The supreme head center. It is therefore a miniature picture of the whole evolution of spirit and matter, for 1. The lowest center corresponds to the personality, 2. The middle center to the ego or the thinker, 3. The supreme head center to the monad. In the evolution of the fires of the spine, we have a correspondence to the sutratma with its three points of interest, the monadic auric egg, its emitting point, the egoic auric egg, the medial point, and the body or gross form, its lowest point. End of side 2, cassette number 27, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 1159. Continued on cassette number 28.